ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the polyspeak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
It's a tale of Australian business turmoil as we record today. After criticism and pressure, we have more KPMG heads rolling. And the one-time Australian technology darling, WiseTech Global, saw its share price pummeled yesterday, hitting a five-year low in the latest episode of Scandal enveloping its founder. Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm Ian Verinder, the ABC's Chief Business Correspondent.
Ian, there's a lot of news that's just hit us before we've sat down to record this. It's around 11:30 a.m. here in Sydney. But after building pressure, KPMG now has announced that its chairman and two audit partners will be leaving the firm. Now, this follows, obviously, that kind of blockbuster Senate inquiry that we saw on Friday. When I was talking to Michael yesterday, I was asking, will this actually have ramifications for the organisation, or have they managed to effectively stonewall it? It looks like it is biting. So the KPMG chair, Martin Shepherd, he's stepping down, and then the two audit partners, Paul Rogers and Eileen Hoggett, also leaving KPMG. Is this the end of the bloodletting, do you think? And how do you think KPMG has responded so far to this scandal?
Well, there's already been some bloodletting because the chief executive also stood aside several weeks ago. So I doubt whether this is the end of it. This is a classic case of the cover-up actually doing far more damage than the unconscionable conduct, really.
And we know that at least Lendlease, like the company that it was, what, auditing for 70 years was so angry about what it says was its information being incorrectly used, that it was willing to dump them as its audit as its auditor.
Yeah, and I mean, even from what we discovered last week in the hearing, I mean, more seems to come to light. I mean, during the hearing, evidence was given by KPMG that they only delved into some of these confidential documents on three occasions. Now, it now comes to light that it can't be three, that it must be far more than that from the admissions that they've made, because there is at least three companies involved here. And there's several times when they've delved into some of these their emails and communications and documents from various companies within KPMG.
Part of the controversy and one of the characteristics of this particular scandal is the structure of KPMG as a partner model. Now, we were hearing reports that individual partners of KPMG were furious with the way that the inquiry went on Friday, and that there was going to be a lot of pressure on the chairman. Now, he had that pressure is obviously built to a point where he's stepping aside. And interestingly, they say that they will replace him with an independent chairman. Now, there might be some skepticism regarding the appointment of an independent chairman, because we know that the independent directors, perhaps most famously Mike Baird, the former New South Wales Premier, was talking about his concerns not necessarily being listened to when he was raising them as an independent director. Will having an independent chairman actually make much of a difference to the way that this organisation is governed?
Not really. I think the biggest problem here is the fact that it's not an organisation that is governed by the corporations law, because it's a partnership. And so not being a corporation means that ASIC can't really move in and
regulate and enforce and take action against them in the way that it would for a normal corporate entity.
And so the penalties that can be meted out to this organisation and the other members of the Big Four pale into insignificance when you look at what can happen if you're a director of a public company or even a private company. So as a partnership, the attempts or the law governing them is really, it needs to be beefed up in a big way.
What's interesting about this particular scandal is the way it became public, which was, so a whistleblower has made a complaint through the proper process within the organisation, goes nowhere, according to the whistleblower. It then takes a senator acting through parliamentary privilege, which gives the advantage of you can't be sued for defamation. There are protections over what parliamentarians are able to say that those of us outside parliament aren't able to say. So Senator Deb O'Neill was able to do that without facing any potential repercussions. That then raises it into the public sphere where journalists are also able to then pursue this story. And we've had lots of different reporting coming out, getting more and more details before finally coming at the moment to the pinnacle, which was the Senate hearings that we saw last Friday. I mean, is this an indication that the system doesn't work?
Well, the protections that normally apply to whistleblowers do not apply in this kind of situation because KPMG is not governed by the corporations law.
Yeah, extraordinary. I want to kind of talk about another scandal that's been kind of roiling the business community here in Australia, but playing out very differently because this is actually a publicly listed company. And so that does come with certain rules about the way that those companies that are listed on the Australian stock market have to respond to scandals. So this is regarding WiseTech Global. For a long time, it was one of Australia's tech success stories. And I actually remember being at the day when it floated on the Australian stock market. Richard White was there, the man who, overnight really went from being somebody most people outside a very small niche of the technology world would have had any idea who he was to being, a billionaire multi times over and who had built this company where Australia was actually a player, pretty niche part of the technology market, but a very lucrative one and did very well. But this company now has been roiled by scandals for a couple of years now, most of them to do with Richard White's private life. The Nine Papers had this report out yesterday saying that the AFP were investigating him over allegations that he exploited a woman's immigration status and financial insecurity for sex and provided false information on a visa application. WiseTech, no word in response. This was out there. We saw their share price hammered down over 18%. They have now come out today, so the day after this kind of broke, and said they're not aware of any investigation by the AFP. Richard White has denied any allegations of wrongdoing. And the company says, well, even if there is a investigation being carried out by the AFP, it's about a personal matter. It has nothing to do with the company anyway. I mean, what do you make of the way this has played out and how seriously shareholders should be taking these allegations and basically, where are we at now with WiseTech Global?
It's a really unique kind of situation in many ways because I don't think we've ever seen sex scandals like this played out on such a grand scale and in the public quite so much. Now, this all blew up about 2 years ago when, outside the realms of the public company, Richard White had a relationship with a woman and had been involved with her and had promised a business deal. Now, something went wrong in the course of that. She complained that the business deal didn't proceed and she wanted money for it, and then she sued him. And so his personal life suddenly unraveled in front of the entire business world and the community at large. Now, again, you could say that had nothing to do with the company, except that Richard White is not just the founder of WiseTech, wasn't just the person running it. He's also the major shareholder. And so, you had a situation where all of these big investors, including the Future Fund, are looking at it going, look, excuse me, this is all a bit unsavory. And when we invest in a company, and particularly a company that is dominated by one person in particular, we expect some kind of standards of behavior here. Now, okay, they could say, look, this was outside the company, so that's one thing. But then, of course, what happened was a whole raft of allegations from other women came about. And so as a result of that, he was eventually removed from the company. But as the biggest shareholder, he simply voted himself back on. And there was all the independent directors walked. He's now the executive chairman of the company, which is a title that most investors hate. I mean, they want a chairman overseeing the executive, not an executive chairman.
And this is a relatively common practice, though, in America, isn't it? But in Australia, we normally have a clear separation between the chairman, who's in charge of the board, is there for governance issues, and the CEO who actually handles the day-to-day running of the company. The chairman is not normally does not normally have a role in the executive, the kind of day-to-day running of the organization.
Yeah, correct. So you've got that position there. And once again, we've got a situation where you could argue, well, it's outside the realms of the company. Well,
the allegation is around a different company. Yes, the woman had a role with an organization that Richard White is involved with. And again, these are only allegations which are being denied, and about whether or not that role actually was a role that was necessary for that company, or whether or not it was being utilized in order for her to meet the migration requirements for a work visa.
The woman at the center of these allegations, though, did make complaints last year and apparently came to a financial resolution or settlement with Richard White. But once again, it just creates this messy picture of the, I guess, personal involvement within, which is inappropriate, relationships within a corporation from somebody in a position of power, and it reflects badly on the company itself. And I mean, interestingly, Morningstar, which is
this is fascinating, right? Because we have Morningstar coming out and saying, well, actually, if Richard White is no longer involved with the company, then the company isn't worth as much. They're putting a real premium on him staying involved. And actually, their fear isn't whether or not there is an investigation by the AFP. They're concerned that if there is an investigation, or that something will happen that will actually force Richard White completely out of the business.
Which, you know, you've got this now situation of, well, what's more important, behavioural standards and governance or the money?
And maybe it's a crude comparison, but one of my instant kind of reflections was there is a common thread between kind of Richard White and, say, an Elon Musk, isn't there? The kind of larger-than-life characters are seen as so essential to the kind of essence of their business, and they seem to have, you know, scandal kind of rolling around them, and yet people are willing to forgive them as long as the business is doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there was a period there where there were questions when it came to Elon Musk, and you know, he's fathering children with many people. Some, I believe, that some of them were connected to some of his business interests, and his kind of complicated personal life. And, you know, obviously his relationship with Donald Trump and his involvement in government, and whether or not that was a distraction from his responsibilities for both Tesla, which is a listed company, so there's more responsibilities, and his private interests at that time, SpaceX, and whether or not he was damaging the brand for Tesla, and that was problematic. And yet here we are, where he is now the world's first trillionaire, and people basically think
all's forgiven.
All is forgiven. Yeah. So, I mean,
and I think, you know, with Richard White, there was, I guess, a great similarity there, where, you know, he sailed through this really turbulent time with the company, his private life to begin with, then being dumped essentially from the company that he created, then fighting his way back in. And again, you know, people, oh, well, that's all in the past. And now, unfortunately, it appears not. But I mean, I think it was really quite extraordinary that these allegations were published quite early yesterday morning, and we didn't hear a peep out of the company or Richard White either around whether the veracity of these complaints or the you know, the story itself.
And if you look at the share price, I mean, it sold off more than 18%. Now, if WiseTech believed that these reports were wrong, then they should have gotten out ahead
of it.
And the journalists went to them and asked them about these questions, and they were given the opportunity to knock them down.
Yeah.
But if you were a shareholder who owned WiseTech ahead of Monday's trading session, and then you've seen your share price battered down 18%, and then they've come out, I mean, it's bounced a little bit today. It's not a huge amount, but there's an argument that they have cost those shareholders who've sold yesterday more money than they should have lost, because they didn't get ahead of this story to try to cut it off at the pass, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can always just issue a statement early in the morning and say there is this report that's out there about the personal life of the chairman has nothing to do with running the company. We deny and refute any of these allegations, and we'll be taking legal action. But there was none of that.
And so we do have a few shareholders, including Hester, the superannuation fund manager, who have said that they've been raising concerns for a sustained period about Richard White's involvement with the organization. They're a pretty small shareholder, though, less than 1%, I think. As you point out, there are other bigger shareholders who think Richard White, including Richard White, think that he should stay in that organization. I mean, how do you deal with that tension point, which is There are those people who say, well, we've bought into this company because we believe in Richard White and we don't want him to go away. And relatively smaller investors who say, well, he's not adhering to the norms of how you should act if you're the chairman of a publicly listed company and there are certain rules of behavior that you're supposed to adhere to. How do you thread that needle?
Well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, and it does get down to, well, you know, do we want you to behave in a certain way, you know, appropriately, or do we just care about the profits and the money? But these things can bring a company undone. I mean, look, interestingly, WiseTech is under pressure on other fronts as well. I mean, it's a software company, logistics it's involved with, essentially. And I think they've come up years ago with some quite interesting shipping and logistics software. Then realize that the rest of the world is it's not a very rationalized industry, that there's a little players all over the globe and they've run around the world and basically bought up a whole bunch of smaller players and put their software into all of these, into a global network. And now it's the dominant network. So it's been a very smart business in the way it's been run. But as we know, software and software providers are under pressure from artificial intelligence. And WiseTech is not immune from that. It's been sacking workers. So there's a lot of internal issues, you know, coursing through the company. And of course, once that starts to happen, people who have grievances within the company, who know things, will come out and leak that information.
We've mentioned Elon Musk and perhaps some of the comparison that could be made between him and Richard White. We have seen since the launch of SpaceX on the stock market some quite extraordinary now volatility. It looked for a while that this was a one-way bet, Ian. If you have bought SpaceX shares, you were going to do well. It has come down a lot in the last couple of days. But I read your article with interest, which was talking about perhaps the launch of SpaceX onto the stock exchange could actually be a step change when it comes to how many shares are actually available for purchase by people, and the consolidation we'd seen over the last couple of decades on the share market, where bigger companies gobbling up smaller companies or companies being taken off the stock market by private equity, that might now, maybe SpaceX might signify a shift. Take us through your analysis.
Yeah, look, I mean, it was just something I picked up a couple of days ago, really, but the number of companies that are listed on the stock exchange, and we've gone through numerous stories in Australia where, oh, the incredible shrinking Australian stock exchange. And it's true. There's the number of companies listed on the ASX now is way down on what it was 15, 20 years ago. And a good reason for that, we've had a lot of foreign companies coming in, taking over some of our bigger operations. And we've had private equity firms.
And a lot of like pension funds, what we would call superannuation funds, coming over and wanting particularly infrastructure plays, wanting to take them off the stock market so that they can manage them privately.
And we've had private equity firms come in and essentially gobble up a lot of companies that weren't performing particularly well, which they want to transform. And those private equity companies also going to unlisted companies, smaller developing companies that would ordinarily look at listing on the stock exchange. So we've had all of these companies leave the ASX and then companies that normally would graduate onto the ASX going elsewhere and staying private. But this is not just an Australian phenomenon. This is a global phenomenon. And, if you look at the numbers with Wall Street, for instance, I mean, back in 1990, there was something like 7,500 companies listed on Wall Street. That's down to around about 3,600 now. So, you know, around half of the companies have disappeared for the very same reasons. But there's another factor here as well, and that's with share buybacks. So not only have you had a lot more money chasing a smaller number of investment opportunities in terms of firms, the firms themselves that have been listed, particularly on Wall Street, have been out there reducing the number of shares that they have on issue and through what's known as share buybacks. And now in the past, in the 20 years to 2021, around about $12 trillion US dollars was spent by US corporations buying back their own shares. So they're reducing the amount of shares that are actually listed on the stock exchange. And that's accelerated since 2021. Last year, $1 trillion US dollars was spent on share buybacks. And look, why? Well, if you're a chief executive of a company, you've made a decent profit that year, You don't really have any ideas about what to do with the profit, you know, and this is one of the reasons why productivity has stalled around the world, because corporations haven't been investing in their own businesses. They've been shuffling money out to shareholders. And so you buy back.
So your option as a company is, well, do I take the profit and invest in, if you're a manufacturer, invest in new plant because I actually think I can get an even bigger slice of the market or the new markets that I go to. Or if I'm a tech company, I invest more into research and development.
Yeah.
Or do I just give the money back to my shareholders in the form of either through a dividend or through a share buyback and actually take shares out of the market effectively by buying them from people who are willing to sell them to me?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of reasons why you do that if you're a chief executive. Number one, your bonus is probably tied to the share price. So if you're jumping in there and buying back a whole lot of your own shares, your share price goes up. You give that money to shareholders in a very tax-effective way. And there's another factor here as well. A lot of American companies measure their performance in terms of earnings per share. So if you reduce the number of shares on issue, your earnings per share automatically rises.
It's just a very simple mathematical formula. Yeah,
So this has been going on for 20 years or more, 25 years, and it looks as though that might be about to shift. Because suddenly you've got a big new company listing on the exchange.
A huge new company, yeah. Right? One that's catapulted into the top 10 instantly. It's extraordinary.
And raising vast amounts of money. So it's rather than the trend of taking paper companies and paper off the exchange and out of public hands, you're actually putting a company on and issuing a vast amount of paper. So that is a significant shift. Now, you know, we've got SpaceX there.
Yep.
We've also got Anthropic about to do the same thing and OpenAI. So there are three big reasons why this could change. Then add into the equation that you've got the big tech companies there that have really, their whole business is actually shifting as we watch, because for years they've been essentially ideas companies. They've, you know, promoted this and that, and they've sold software, all capital light kind of things that haven't required huge amounts of capital investment. But now they're going into the business of data centers.
Yeah.
That means you've got to buy real estate. That means you've got to build buildings. You've got to have cooling towers, power plants, rockets to put your satellites up into, you know, all of this hardware. So they're shifting out of software and into hardware, and that's going to require a lot of money. So they've been funding this out of cash flow until now, and then they've started raising debt. And now the obvious way to go is to actually start raising money from public investors. And so they're going to require huge amounts of public investment. So you have to ask the question, is there enough money to go around for all of this?
Yeah, well, so far, as I said, there's been some volatility with SpaceX in the last couple of days, but up until then it seemed like there was a lot of money chasing not enough shares.
Yeah.
Now, that may shift. As you say, we've got OpenAI and Anthropic to come later in the year. At some point, perhaps, there's enough shares for people to be satiated.
Well, and then you get to the point where, well, do I sell my shares in, you know, XYZ and shift into Apple, you know?
And again, pulling it back to the conversation about WiseTech and perhaps even linking it to the business model of the corporate structure of KPMG, there are advantages and disadvantages when you're trying to run a business, depending on the type of corporate entity it is. And being a listed company does come with more requirements when it comes
absolutely.
To and for somebody like an Elon Musk, there are rules around having interests in different businesses that you might be personally profiting from when you've got a management role at one company. It's a complicated spaghetti map between, say, SpaceX and Tesla, where Elon Musk has obviously major shareholdings in both, but also they have relationships between them. Now, there is a question about whether or not at some point we will see SpaceX, it looks like the bigger entity, to take over Tesla.
I think that's a given, really.
I think that's what he would prefer. But then I think
And it'll
also
be done with very expensive shares.
And there'll be interesting questions around exactly how he might benefit from that when he's selling out of Tesla effectively. But yeah, there are costs to individuals for changing the structure of your business. So we'll see how that plays out. That is it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. And a note that as we're recording this morning, there is news breaking surrounding Labor's proposed changes to capital gains tax and to negative gearing. And it appears it will now pass Parliament following a deal with the Greens. Our sister podcast, Politics Now, will bring you the latest political analysis on that news. And we'll keep watching it and be sure to keep you updated. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to send us in your tax questions as we're hard at work on a series of bonus episodes all about tax, ready to hit your feeds next week. You can drop us a line or a voice note at abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. Catch you next time, Ian.
See ya.